Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. Ojibwe co-founder of the American Indian Movement, Dennis Banks, recently walked on. He was well known for forcing America to see Native rights through direct actions in the 70s, like the occupation of Wounded Knee and the takeover of the Bureau of Indian Affairs building in Washington, D.C. In later years, he focused on issues such as combating drug and alcohol abuse and a resurgence of respecting traditional foods. Right after the news, we'll remember Dennis Banks.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of South Dakota is hosting a hate crimes forum in Rapid City Thursday. As Jim Kent reports, the gathering is being held at the same time a major annual Native American sports and cultural event takes place across town.
The Lakota Nation Invitational is a basketball tournament and cultural extravaganza started in the 1970s. At the time, non-Native high school teams wouldn't travel to the Pine Ridge Reservation for games due to concern over reported crime rates there. It's been generally said that the tournament was created as a rally against racism. This is the event's 38th year in Rapid City, drawing Native students, athletes, scholars, and their families from across the region. U.S. Attorney Randy Seiler says there is a correlation for holding the Hate Crimes Forum at the same time as the Lakota Nation Invitational.
Recently, the FBI released their 2016 hate crime statistics. And, you know, they're sobering. And for the second year in a row, there's been a reported rise in the number of crimes motivated by bias.
Seiler adds that failing to acknowledge the bias issue toward Native Americans in South Dakota in general and in Rapid City in particular is simply a matter of burying your head in the sand. The U.S. attorney encourages Native Americans to report such crimes and to know that they will be treated with respect and understanding. The Rapid City Hate Crimes Forum at the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology is open to the public. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
For the first time in its 45-year history, a school district's Native program in Eugene, Oregon, has started work on a totem pole. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
About a dozen Native American children with chisels, mallets, and safety goggles chip away bark from a 25-foot-long cedar log. Master carver Vic Hansen.
We are hoping to get it finished in time for spring break 2018. You don't usually see as many powerful totems on a single log as we're going to put on this one, but it's because we have so many tribes that are represented.
While Hansen himself is not with a tribe, Natives Director Brenda Brainerd, the Confederated Tribes of Coos, Laura Umpqua, and Siosla Indians, says his reverence and talents qualify him for the project.
Vic has been carving for over 20 years. He's carved poles all over, and he started out carving with a Native carver. He has such great skills, and he's so good with the kids.
Eventually, the finished pole will be installed at Sheldon High School. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull in Eugene, Oregon.
Navajo Nation President Russell Begay signed a contract this week to purchase software to implement an emergency alert system, including Amber Alerts. The lack of technology and need for such alerts was raised after a young girl was abducted and killed in a Navajo community in New Mexico in 2016. The girl's family called for improved technology, saying emergency alerts may have helped save her life. President Begay says the alert system is needed to help make sure a child is recovered safely and quickly. With the purchase from the company Everbridge, the tribe will have the ability to issue immediate notifications on its own. According to the Navajo Department of Emergency Management, the tribe will have the capability to push alerts by radio, television, and text messaging to all 11 counties which fall within tribal borders. Alerts would also be for weather notifications, road closures, fires, and other dangers. On Tuesday, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld a ruling on the 20-year ban on new uranium mining near the Grand Canyon. The ban was imposed under the Obama administration as mining operations were renewing interest in the area. Tribes in Arizona are among those applauding the ruling as the area is culturally significant to them. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, advising us all to protect the circle of life. Help prevent the spread of the flu by getting a flu vaccine each year. Learn more at aaip.org. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. His friends and family, who we'll speak with today, will let you know he advocated passionately for Native people and the need for the United States government to live up to its legally binding promises. Dennis Banks, who walked on October 29th, co-founded the American Indian Movement, or AIM, in Minneapolis, Minnesota in 1968. Among other things AIM organized was the occupation of Alcatraz, Wounded Knee, and the Department of Interior building takeover in Washington, D.C. And Dennis Banks was at all of them. Today, many Native people celebrate these events and how they've helped focus the nation's attention on the ongoing struggles Native people faced in the 70s that included racism, corruption, neglected treaty promises, and federal policy that hindered Native progress, which are all issues that we still hear about today that are perplexing Native lives. This is just one part of this Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe members' story. We know there are other chapters to his life and work. And if you have something you'd like to share about the life of Dennis Banks, give us a call. Phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. We do look forward to your calls. And we're going to go ahead and start. We did some looking in our archives and revisited moments where Dennis was on these airwaves and had talked to us. In 2004, Ojibwe warrior Dennis Banks and the Rise of the American Indian Movement was the book of the month. Banks shared with us that he spent almost 10 years away at boarding schools during his youth. He said the experience was difficult.
We were forbidden to speak the language at the boarding schools or even singing the songs. It was ironic because it was an Indian school, yet it was geared to de-Indianize us. They were all Indian boarding schools, and with Indian counselors, but the primary purpose was to de-Indianize us, to beat the Indian out of us and make us like white, little marching soldiers. Yeah.
And maybe you tuned in for that book of the month. Maybe you've read that book since. Anything you want to share about learning more about the life of Dennis Banks? Our phone lines are open. We look forward to weaving you into the conversation. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And right now, it is our pleasure to say hello to a few of our guests. Joining us from Rapid City, South Dakota, from the Lakota Nation Invitational, is Tashina Banks Rema. She is the Executive Director of Advancement at the Red Cloud Indian School in Pine Ridge, and she is the daughter of Dennis Banks, and she is Lakota and Ojibwe. It's our pleasure to welcome her into the hour. Tashina, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Tara. I appreciate this opportunity to highlight Dad's life and work.
Indeed, and we got somebody you know well on the line, too. We're going to go to Leech Lake, Minnesota to say hello to Mano Banks. And he is the son of Dennis Banks. And he is Anishinaabe with the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. Mano, it's our pleasure to have you with us as well.
Hi, Tara. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. Well, Mano and Tashina, I just want to give you both a moment. We do appreciate you being here with us, being family members and
connecting us to somebody who was very influential in your life. And as we start to remember, Tashina, anything you want to start us off with when we think about the life and legacy of your father?
Yeah, I've given this a lot of thought since your producers reached out. And, you know, there are so many elements to him to share with everyone. And I know many of your listeners will have their own wonderful stories, and they know different, you know, parts of him and great stories. But the one thing I think that I maybe not everyone knows, or, you know, his persona wasn't always shining through with the media and how he was perceived. But I think what's most important for folks to know about him is that he was spiritually centered. He was a spiritually centered man, and he was a pipe carrier. He was a sun dancer. He was an Ogichida. He was, you know, doing the work to be a part of the Madewan society. And these are important aspects of him that were really, I believe, at the core of who he was as a man, as a human, as a father, as a friend, as a community organizer, as a human rights leader. In every way that he worked in the world, those were the things that guided him. It was his spirituality. And so I think that's important to share. I want to share that first about him. You know, another thing is maybe not a lot of folks know either, is that he was an entrepreneur. You know, he had an entrepreneurial spirit. He didn't work for anybody necessarily. He was always trying to bring industry and jobs to the communities. He was trying to figure out how to create business in his own life, because that's who he was. You know, he was about kind of charting new territory, but more importantly, with his own personal business with the Dennis James Banks Foods, for him it was about revitalizing a way of life, and that was, you know, to harvest wild rice in the traditional methods that the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe do and practice, and also to tap maple syrup from the maple trees that grow there on the land. So that was his big thing these last 10-15 years, was the wild rice and maple syrup business, and working there in the community, promoting business amongst all the families in Leech Lake who use traditional methods to harvest the rice.
And it's very important, and I'm glad to hear that, you know, he was there supporting some of that. And the many shows that we've done on wild rice, and just understand everything that comes with it. And then, of course, even tasting some of the rice and having that connection, what you put on your table. And I think there's a lot to be said there. Tashina, thank you for starting us off that way. And Manol, anything you want to start us off with?
No, I just want to, you know, reinforce my sister's her take on saying that, you know, my dad was spiritual, and that was the best thing that he ever taught me. You know, he taught me so much, but that was the best thing he taught me about Creator as a young boy. And I think that's the best thing that any of us could teach the young ones growing up. You know, start them really young, get them to have that sense connection with Creator and the earth, you know, right from the beginning. And that's what I want to share.
Sure. And Manol, at the beginning, we heard your father's words just talking about boarding school. And I think we all learn a lot anytime our elders talk about what their experience is. And he shared, you know, painted a picture for us. Are there any lessons that you've held close to you about just understanding the path he walked and even boarding school? Manol?
Yeah, definitely. There's, you know, every time he shared about what he went through, you know, it just kind of, it gets you real deep, you know. And then there's, one of the documentaries that was made about him, the drum will never stop. And they have four or five elders talking about boarding school era, and it's like it's just hard to listen to, you know, because it's just horrible things that they did to those young kids, you know, growing up. And like how strongly they wanted to defeat the Native mindset, you know, that I think about that all the time, you know, and how important that was to my dad to reclaim that, you know, and to, you know, it's one of the most powerful things that we have as Native people, is our identity, our culture, our language, our songs, our ceremonies, you know. And I'm doing my best to carry that on in my day-to-day lives, and just keep that going for my dad, you know, and then for the next generation too.
Well said. Manoah, we're glad you're sharing these things with us. We know you want to share something too. We are looking at the life and legacy of Dennis Banks. Phone lines are open. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. What would you like to share? We look forward to hearing from you. Let's go ahead and take our first call. We got Josh in Cleveland, Ohio, tuned in online. Josh, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Thank you for taking my call. I am Southern Cheyenne with the Cheyenne Arapaho Tribes of Oklahoma, and I just wanted to let Dennis Banks' children know that their father has touched my life in a positive way. His story, his work, has inspired me to reclaim my indigenous identity, history, and spiritual ways, and inspired me to fight for indigenous people, fight against racism and injustice. And I wanted to just throw a question out there too and say, why are we never taught about Dennis Banks in school? We're taught about the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Rosa Parks. We're never taught about Dennis Banks. We never learn about Dennis Banks or the American Indian movement. And I want to know why that is.
All right, I'm going to toss that to Tashina. What are your thoughts? Thank you for your call as well, Josh. There in Cleveland, again, you can join us, 1-800-996-2848. Go ahead, Tashina.
Josh, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I think that it's easy for textbooks and the, you know, the big kind of the big education publishers to kind of latch on to mainstream history. But that you bring that up is so incredibly poignant, because that was something that Dad said often. I mean, even if you were to find old archive footage of him being interviewed back when in the late 60s, when AIM was just starting and it was being born, and it was being born out of a time where Native people were trying to kind of, you know, self-determine their own education in the schools. And, you know, these conversations had never happened before that. And that was his big thing, is we need to be telling history. Native people, indigenous people need to be sharing our own history with our community, and not just so that our kids know it, but so that everybody knows it, because history can't be only written by the people who won the wars. And I know we've all heard that over and over, but that was a very big point of his, was education, and that he was very much about that. And so that fight continues. That continues. There are a lot of people like you, Josh, who believe that. And there are a lot of educated folks who do have this power, I think, in the universities and in the school systems nowadays, who are kind of moving more into this understanding that indigenous education for our students, and not just for indigenous students, but for the community at large, is critically important. And so that fight needs to continue, and that conversation needs to keep occurring. Thank you, Josh.
All right, Josh, thank you for your call. We're going to go to Sharon now in Marin County, California, tuned in online. Sharon, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Hello. I want to thank Manoah and Tashina for standing by Dennis for this whole time. I want to thank Dennis for his longtime friendship with me. I interviewed him on radio in 1976, and he invited me to the first Western Sundance to observe it at DQ University. I wrote articles about AIM for the Berkeley Barb. He teased me a lot, and he called me Skolnick. That's my last name. Our friendship leapt over
the cultural wall of being strangers to each other. I think I was a bridge person for him then. He's a very important teacher in my life. I believed in what he was doing for Indigenous people.
All right, Sharon. Thank you for calling. I think I heard her say as she was leaving, he was her hero. Sharon, thank you for your call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We're going to bring in another voice. Looks like we got Wichelle Banks on the line in Reno, Nevada, tuned in online. Wichelle, it's our pleasure to weave you into the hour. Go ahead and talk about your connection to Dennis Banks.
Well, thank you very much for doing this show today and paying tribute to him. He really was a legend, you know, and like Tashina said, a very spiritual person. And, you know, but I didn't meet him until I was in my early 30s. Boarding schools, divorces, the movement, the work, you know, I think was a reason that I didn't meet him until then. But just hanging out with him, you know, was so much fun, and laughing, you know, joking around with him. And sometimes I'd just stop and think, wow, you know, I'm hanging out with Dennis Banks. He was just so iconic. And his, I think, you know, some of the tributes that have come in from all over the world, when I got back from Minnesota, the BBC radio wanted to interview me, you know, and the tributes that have come in all around just, I think, really show what an icon he was. And here in America, I think I would love to see on our homeland a museum to Dennis, you know. And just he had such an incredible life, you know. And I think that I was not fond of the New York Times obituary, and it basically said that he did nothing to alter the day-to-day lives of American Indians. And I thought, whoa, do a little digging, you know, because just going on Facebook and hearing people like some of your callers today saying, wow, he inspired us to reclaim ceremonies, you know, songs, our dances, our languages. And he really just truly changed this world, and the world will not be the same without him.
Wichelle, I appreciate you giving us a ring, sharing your thoughts on your father. And, you know, I think you take us to a good point of seeing the life that was lived by Dennis and the places he traveled to, the people whom he connected with, and, of course, his involvement with the American Indian Movement. Folks, if there's anything you want to share, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We're going to take another call. We're going to say hello to Lenny in St. Michael, Arizona, tuned in online. Lenny, thank you for your call. You're on air. Hey, Lenny. All right, let's see if we can get him back on the line. Tashina, I want to turn to you as we think about the legacy with AIM and some of the things that you could say about his involvement, the many things that AIM did. Let's open this chapter. Anything you want to say about AIM?
Certainly there is. And I just want to first just clarify, Wichelle, I'm really glad Wichelle called. She's our cousin. She's the daughter of our Uncle Mark, my dad's older brother, who's still very alive and well and strong. And so, hi, Uncle Mark. Just want to make sure Wichelle's Uncle Mark's daughter. Yes, so AIM, boy, I tell you, lots to say about AIM. Where do you want to start? I think I can speak from it about it a little bit from my perspective, and you know, try to be focused in my remarks here. But you know, I grew up, I guess, in the movement. I was born in 1974, and that was kind of like, you know, just like, well, things were like at the height. We're kind of coming off of the height of things. Wounded Knee was just occurred a year before, the Custer riots, Alcatraz a few years before that, the Trail of Broken Treaties was coming, like, you know, the shootout, you know, as an infant, my mother and father had me at the camp, the Jumping Bull residence, where the shootout with the federal government and the campers at Jumping Bull residence, where that shootout took place, and subsequently two FBI agents were killed. Leonard Peltier is now serving two back-to-back life sentences. And, you know, that was the life. I was a baby in all of that. I was a baby when the motorhome in Portland was carrying my dad, my mom, Russ Redner, Anna Mae Aquash, and the sheriff. There was a shootout with the sheriffs, and they, I don't know how many rounds, but, you know, hundreds of rounds were shot into the Winnebago. But I was in that Winnebago. That's the early chapters of my life with AIM. I grew up with mom and dad, you know, taking us to rallies. I grew up hearing the AIM song, you know. Some kids would ride in the back of the car on road trips and, you know, sing, you know, different kind of songs. We sang powwow songs, Sundance songs, the AIM song. For me, it was not weird that, you know, if there was a capital, if we were in the state and there was a capital, we were going to the it was very natural that we go to the capital and we put up some flags and we pull out a drum and we sing the AIM song. Like, those are my childhood memories. And I grew up with all the kids of the movement. You know, that was just who we were. So from my perspective there, you know, I guess I don't want to ramble on. So maybe there's a specific question, but I can't say anything more about AIM that hasn't been said by dad or by other AIM leaders. I only know it from my perspective, and I'm very proud of our father's role in, you know, in AIM. And, you know, he never took credit for starting AIM. He was a co-founder. You know, there were many people in Minneapolis who were part of that origination of that time. And so he was, he very much always gave credit to those other folks who were there, Clyde Belcourt, Fannie Fairbanks. There were important people who contributed to that effort and launched that movement and really brought life to that era. So,
well, you know what, Tashina, we are going to share a little bit of that. And in the Native America Calling Archives, we asked him a little bit about some of that. And you know what? We're going to play that song. And he did such a wonderful intro on it with the piece that we're going to share. All this, folks, after the break. Tashina, Manoa, thank you for being with us, or Manoa, and we're going to go ahead and go to break here, but we'll keep these phone lines open, 1-800-996-2848. After an earlier permit was shot down, the Hawaii Board of Land and Natural Resources voted again to grant a permit for the controversial 30-meter telescope project. The $1.4 billion telescope is slated to sit atop Mauna Kea, a mountain that many Native Hawaiians consider sacred. We'll get deeper into this on the next Native America Calling.
Buju, Dijikan Mino Ayawin Gabe Bibun. Dangi Gwenenege Nongam, Ganoj 1-800-318-2596, Gema Mawidishiwen, go.cms.gov/native health. Gaundinagadeg, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Miigwech.
Support by Canyon Records, producer of Native American music, including Radmila Cody's Kehasin, Kinship and Hope. All Canyon titles available from iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, and CanyonRecords.com. Support by AARP, creating and connecting you to unique tools and content like Native Origins, incorporating Native American culture with recipes inspired by indigenous foods. More at aarp.org/Native Origins.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling, and thanks for joining us today. We are glad you've chosen to spend a little bit of your day with us. Visit our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com, to learn about upcoming shows or to listen to past shows. We're remembering the life of Dennis Banks today, and if you've got something you'd like to share, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And now we go to a piece that definitely brings forward many memories for people and people associated with the American Indian Movement.
This song is the American Indian Movement National Anthem Song. This song was adopted in 1972 in Gordon, Nebraska, when the American Indian Movement went there to protest the judicial handling of an Indian's death. His name was Raymond Yellow Thunder. This song was originally dedicated to the Yellow Thunder family, but because of the story behind it, the Northern Cheyenne people gave this song to the American Indian Movement. And here it is.
Perhaps you stood alongside Dennis Banks singing this song and you want to remember him today. You can at 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We're going to go ahead and try Lenny again in St. Michael's, Arizona, tuned in today. Lenny, thank you for your call. Go ahead, you're on air and your memories of Dennis Banks.
Yes, I first of all, I want to thank you for allowing me to participate in your program here, and I think it's a very important program to demonstrate the significance and the impact of the American Indian Movement on the political landscape of the American Indian today. I first met Dennis Banks at the Sundance in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, 1970. I was a junior at Colorado State University, and was introduced to him by Vernon Balcourt, Clyde Balcourt. And through the years, I've participated in many campaigns with him, including Cass Lake, Raymond Yellow Thunder, the BI takeover, Wounded Knee, Longest Walk in 1978, the Longest Walk in 2008, and then the recent low ox he's made. And I found him to be very intelligent, very spiritual. He's also a stern and a strict person, too, and a humorous person. you get to know him, and he confides in you, and I found that this movement was a very serious impact on the Indian people in today's society. And it's only a matter of time where eventually all of the history of Dennis Banks and all the warriors that were part of this American Indian movement will be taught in schools. And it's our responsibility to encourage that and to include that in the curriculum.
And
my son danced with him.
Sure, go ahead, finish your thought.
Crow Dog's Paradise. And the last time we sun danced together was at the Pipestone, Minnesota, 1999.
And Lenny, when we think of AIM and, you see it from, standing there alongside with your brothers and sisters and taking a look at this, and also just often we hear the movement and what it brought forward. And then we also hear times when we think of AIM and people see a different side and they say, well, there was a lot of violence. There was a lot of infighting. And can you connect things together with us today, Lenny, of seeing some of this and what it led to in people who only remember negative? Lenny?
Well, we had to defend the Indian people, and we had to defend ourselves, and that was the warrior society and the feeling of being a defender of the people and the land. And that was important. And that was something that the leaders, including Dennis Banks, gave us, and that we had that responsibility to defend the elders and defend the way of life and defend Mother Earth.
And Lenny, I think something that grew out of this was just even how much those in the movement talked about treaties, broken treaties. It's what led to the occupation at the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And for the first time, that was a revival, or people even just talking about holding people accountable for treaties. And as you remember the things that did come out of those movements, and you remember Dennis Banks, anything else, Lenny?
Well, we began our involvement in the civil rights struggle, but our issues affecting the Indian people and our ancestors had made treaties with the United States government that elevated our awareness and the status of who we are as a special people in this country. We went beyond the civil rights struggle. We went into the human rights of Indian people, indigenous rights, treaty rights. And that still exists today. And I think the American Indian Movement was one of the many people's organization responsible for the Declaration of Human Rights for Indigenous People worldwide. And I think that needs to be remembered that Dennis Banks was one of the primary people that was responsible for bringing about that awareness to the Indian communities throughout North America. Eventually, this movement took on an international flavor as an indigenous rights movement. And I always say that AIM gave us our pride and dignity, and it was people like Dennis Banks that made that all possible. And he has my utmost respect that I was able to be part of this history, and that history will be kind to him, because we were blessed to have his presence in our life and our world. And I think Indian people should recognize that. And it was a sad day for me when I was informed by Robbie Romero that my leader and our brother had passed on. And I have many positive and good thoughts and prayers that goes out to his family, his kids, his grandkids. And that we have this responsibility to carry on that memory and the responsibility to carry on those teachings, because Dennis Banks was an elder, a mentor, and a friend to me. And I was in closing here, I'd just like to say one thing, that in 1973, as we were going to stand down at Wounded Knee on May 7, 1973, I was asked by Dennis Banks to walk point for him to lead him out of Wounded Knee that night, and he didn't want to surrender. So I had utmost responsibility of doing that, making sure that he was not captured or that we would be ambushed. And we used the pipe in the sweat lodge to pray and to provide us with that protection. Leonard Crudall and Wallace Black Elk conducted that ceremony. Dennis Banks was right there, and he was a spiritual person. A lot of people perhaps don't know that he was sit by his daughter, that he was a sun dancer, he's a pipe carrier, and he enjoyed ceremonies, and everything was done with a prayer. So when we left that evening, once the sun went down, we had to walk 11 miles over hills and through gullies and make sure that we didn't walk into an ambush. And I walked point for him to lead him out and escape. That eventually will be told around campfires and books and movies, I'm sure. That was something that he always told about at conferences and places that I would run into him.
There's so much, there's so much history. And Lenny, I appreciate you sharing some of that with us here today. And you know what, Lenny? Dennis also shared some of that history with us, too. I want to go ahead and share some of it. Here he is in 2004 speaking about what he believed the American movement should be.
I was 32 when we decided to form the American Indian Movement. I'm up 70 now, and I think a movement needs to be done now. I mean, AIM is, in many ways, AIM is, the organization should never be. You know, we shouldn't have, a board of directors of AIM. I that's one thing that I'm the national chairman in the beginning. Well, we thought that it's just a movement. That's all it will ever be. You know, we shouldn't have a secretary. We shouldn't have a treasurer, because the organizations kind of ruin movements.
And when we asked if there was anything about AIM that he regretted, he said he wished the organization could have been more effectively countered the public's misunderstanding.
The thing that I regret most is that we didn't have enough time to stop a lot of discrimination from happening. We weren't there soon enough, and we weren't able to stay. A lot of places where we went in during the 60s and 70s is that we were called in by the communities who were hurting. And so we would go in, at least to arouse attention, to suggest possible, resolve to the situation, and then move on. And I'm sorry that, we didn't have, our program was to get there, see what we can do to stop something or get something going, and then move on. We couldn't stay there. And I think that was, people looked at that as a fault of the American Indian Movement, because we couldn't stay, we couldn't hang around. We didn't have no funds to do that. But anyway, that was one of the regrets. The other regrets is that I'm sorry that there was a lot of people misunderstood what the American Indian Movement was about, and in that understanding, they created their own. We'd go to bars. People would go to bars and they'd get into fights, and they'd say they're being discriminated against, and they're causing their own fights. And then we'd rush over there and find out that, this or that didn't really happen.
And maybe there's more memories you want to share. 1-800-996-2848 as we take a look at the life of Dennis Banks. We got a caller we're going to bring in. Let's go ahead and say hello to Caroline in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Caroline, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Hello.
Thank you for accepting my call. And I'm with the American Indian Movement of Albuquerque. And in November, we had a program to honor Dennis Banks. And it went off very well. We had singers, we had entertainment, we had Minnow Banks speak to us via Messenger, and it was showed on screen, live on screen. We also had local friends of his. And then also, lastly, we had a group of, you know, people representing Diné Pueblo Solidarity, Pueblo Action Alliance, the Red Nation, and also AIM Albuquerque. And the theme of it was healing, liberating, and uniting for Mother Earth. And the whole idea is that we understand, you know, people have been inspired by what the American Indian Movement has done to protect our way of life and our religious practices and our sacred sites. And the fight continues, as you know, from Standing Rock. And even now here, it continues with some of the considered oil and gas fracking ordinance that is being considered within Sandoval County, where we feel that the water needs to be protected. Our sacred sites of Chaco Canyon and the Chaco Canyon greater Chaco Canyon area. So that's what Dennis Banks and the American Indian Movement has brought to this generation and to future generations. We recognize that we have a voice and we're going to use it. And in this situation regarding Sandoval County, we want to be at the front. We want to talk and negotiate and advocate for our people and for all people, because this is an important issue.
Caroline, so, thank you for your call here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I'm going to take another one. We're going to hear from Rachel in Minneapolis, Minnesota, tuned in online. Rachel, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Hi, thank you for having me. I apologize for my voice. I'm still a little sick, but, you know, given today's story, it was too important for me not to call in. So one of the things, you know, I think everyone is really, you know, explaining beautifully just how important Dennis's work is and how far it reached people. And what I appreciated so much about Uncle Dennis is just yet how accessible he was. I am Audrey Banks's granddaughter, Dennis's older sister. And I know how important Audrey was to Dennis since Dennis was so young when they went off to boarding school. Audrey kind of served as a surrogate mother to Dennis during those years. And so my grandmother, Audrey, actually was forced to relinquish her daughters. And so when my mother and my aunties were able to reunify with the family, that was a very big deal for everybody. And then I was actually adopted out as an infant, and I reunified with the family 6 years ago. And Dennis welcomed me back and was so grateful, I think, to have his sister's, you know, granddaughter back with the family, and always made time for me, and, you know, always allowed, you know, the stories and, you know, the family traditions, and, you know, always included me in everything. And I just think it was so representative of just his spirit in general, but, you know, how important family always was to him.
It truly is. And Rachel, we appreciate you sharing that with us. And thank you for remembering with us there in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Right now, we're going to go to Taos, New Mexico, to say hello to Robbie Romero. He knew Dennis Banks. You might know him through his work. It's our pleasure to welcome him to the hour. Robbie, thank you for being with us. And we definitely want to give you a moment if there's anything you'd like to say in tribute to Dennis Banks.
Well, I'd first like to say thank you so much. It's a beautiful day to be able to hear all of the beautiful children and friends, family and extended family, and the callers that have called in share so many things about Dennis and his life. So I want to say that first. Thank you for doing this for Dennis. I really appreciate that. You know, I first met Dennis in 1973 at an AIM camp. And the last camp I was at with Dennis was Ochitisha Koi at Standing Rock. I've had, you know, good and bad days since Dennis took his journey. But Dennis was a lot of different things to a lot of people. And the things that have been shared from Lenny and Tashina and Mano and the callers, you know, all ring true. He was a beautiful human being. He was a fearless, tireless Ojibwe warrior who fought to reclaim, you know, the rights of indigenous peoples. He fought to reclaim culture and the language, the songs and ceremonies of his people. And he was laid to rest amid those songs and those ceremonies and the language of his people that he spent his lifetime fighting for. And Dennis was very dear to me and very close, and you know, so many things, taught me so many things. I traveled the world with Dennis, and I miss him.
I can only imagine, Robbie, and just hearing that closeness, we do appreciate you being here with us, too, also in your time of mourning. And, Robbie, you had a chance to work with Dennis on something that I'm sure you're proud to keep going. And there's even movement through the music. And anything you want to share about how you'll make sure you continue to keep the strength and his legacy going through the music?
Yes, Dennis and I were working on several things, and I will keep them going, and I appreciate you bringing that up. One of them is an 8-hour miniseries on his life story based on the book Ojibwe Warrior, The Rise of the American Indian Movement. My company, Eagle Thunder Enterprises, myself, and the Walpert Organization at Warner Brothers, we are developing an 8-part miniseries, and that is really something that Dennis wanted to make sure happened and instructed me to continue that work, which I will. And born out of Standing Rock, Dennis and I created a Native rock music movement to hashtag honor 1851 treaty. And the movement is about music and film and concerts and events and rallies. It's a campaign to challenge the United States Congress to uphold at least one of the more than 500 treaties made with Native nations. And we're going to do that during this next 5 years, releasing singles. The first one, Born on the Res, was released during Native American Heritage Month and is available at Pledge Music. And we partnered with Pledge Music on this campaign. And Dennis is singing on it. He's singing the choruses, and he's sings a beautiful part at the end. And the music video will come out next year, where we shot Dennis at Wounded Knee when we returned from Standing Rock.
And you know what, Robbie? We'll make sure that we get a link to some of that on our website, too. And definitely we will keep our eyes peeled for some of this work coming out. To learn more about the life and legacy of Dennis Banks. And Robbie, I'm going to turn it to his daughter to take us out of the hour. And just any final thoughts to wrap things up? Let me bring her back in. She's joining us today from Rapid City, South Dakota, at the Lakota National Invitational, Tashina Banks Rama. Tashina, any final thoughts you want to go ahead and close with?
You know, Dad was very much about building community and creating awareness for treaties that still haven't yet been honored by the U.S. government. He had, you know, whether it's now or 10 years from now, we're always going to need those people to go out and confront the issues and take a stand. Even if we, the indigenous people, all become doctors, lawyers, senators, congressmen, there still needs to be someone, a movement, to tell America that there are some very important contracts that were made in the 1700s and 1800s that need to be honored that deal with indigenous land. That was his thing from the 60s to the day that he passed. He wanted treaty rights to be recognized. And the last thing I want to point out is that there is the Longest Walk 5.3. There's a website, longestwalk.us. And this is going to start in February. And the Longest Walk will start in Washington State, and they will walk across the northern part of the United States to Washington, D.C. And I would invite every caller, everyone who would like to support this work. It's about fighting domestic violence and fighting the drugs in our community, because really, you know, all the work to fight for treaty rights and all of that, that work can't be done unless our people are healthy and we're not fighting and killing ourselves off with drugs and alcohol. So please come out to support the Longest Walk 5.3 when it comes through your community, and visit the website if you can. And Tara and Monica, to your team at Native America Calling, thank you very much for honoring our father. It's been really beautiful to hear his voice and to hear him singing. So thank you.
Tashina, thank you for being with us. Our thoughts go out to you, all of his relatives, and people who are remembering the life and the legacy and what Dennis brought to his life. Rest in peace. Tashina Banks Rama, Minot Banks, Bobby Wallace, or Robbie Romero, thank you for being with us today as well. And of course, thanks to everybody who called in. We are back again tomorrow with a show about the fight over the 30-meter telescope on Hawaii's Mauna Kea. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Associate producer is Andy Murphy. And Marino Spencer is our engineer. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. Thank you for tuning in today. Visit us online, nativeamericacalling.com. You can leave your messages directly on our website. And you can also reach out to us on Facebook. Hey, and we are on Twitter and Instagram. Thanks again. We'll meet you here tomorrow.
Break the silence. End sexual violence.
It's time to end sexual violence. Stop pretending it doesn't exist. Stop turning your head and walking away from this crime. It happens. You are not alone. So break the silence. Tell someone, talk about it, and report it. Having this conversation is the first step to breaking the silence. Stand up and join us in the fight to stop sexual violence now. Break the silence. Support provided by the Native American Community Board.
Program support from AmeriCorps Vista. AmeriCorps Vista members make a difference in the fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining valuable skills. We have rewarding service opportunities around the country, focusing on economic opportunity, healthy futures, education, and more. It will change your life and the lives of others. Information at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.